Donal in a Kitchen talks about food. Donal in a Kitchen talks recipes. Donal in a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donal in a Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here around our kitchen table in the studios of KHOI Community Radio, in the middle of Iowa, a great place to be. Well, we've had Iowa summer weather, we've had heat, we've had a good rainstorm, and I guess there was some strong weather south of us, but here in central Iowa, we are okay today. The garden is perking up. I've got a first few tomatoes coming out of the garden. My okra is starting. It's always a bit intimidating when all this stuff starts. My beans are coming in. My eggplants are coming in. It's coming, Donna.
I know. My gooseberries are ripe, too.
See?
Yeah, I know. Everything.
Everything is good.
Hooray,
everything
hooray,
is
hooray.
Good. So we talk about food a lot here on this show, but underneath everything, we have a concern for water because, of all things, we need water.
Yes. Farming relies upon water. And, of course, we're not just talking about our showers and our coffee machines and our laundry. Water, what's that saying? Water is the source of life or something? Anyway, we wanted to talk about water today, but there's a lot of talk about quality of water in Iowa because we all know that there's too much nitrate floating around here.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also going to talk about quantity. So we have with us today Carolyn Raffensperger, who is the... Carolyn, introduce yourself. You have such a complex, professional, wonderful advocacy life.
You know, when we introduce ourselves, we often give our professional credentials. And we don't often talk about the other things that make us who we are. I am Carolyn Raffensperger. I'm the executive director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. I'm a lawyer and archaeologist by training. But as important, I'm a member of a community and deeply connected to Lana and to Donna. Lana and Joe Lynch provided and have provided over the years a huge amount of the food that I've brought into the household and cooked and prepared and preserved. And, you know, I come from a farming background with my husband, Fred Kirschenman. And we moved here from North Dakota, where I was essentially self-sufficient in our home and farm. I raised pretty much everything except dairy and poultry, our own wheat, our cattle. I raised my own citrus indoors. I've raised a lot of things. But when I came to Iowa, I discovered through really the good graces of people like Lana and Donna that my life needed to be about more than self-sufficiency. It needed to be about community sufficiency and what is good for the overall community. And that will eventually lead me into our conversation about water today.
Okay. Well, we wanted to talk, just briefly go over the quality of water. Everybody knows we have too many nitrates in Iowa running off down the Mississippi, you know, ruining our drinking water, making unswimmable lakes and rivers, et cetera, et cetera. And Lana, what's this, the latest Chris Jones,
yes,
Swine Nation author, what was his saying?
Well, Chris Jones is an author and a scientist that tells us what he's found out recently about water. And he's been on this subject for a long time and actually losing a few friends over this for daring to say that, wait a minute, we're putting things in our water that is not good for us nor good for people downstream. And there's a Substack thing on the internet that he puts out every now and then, and here's a few things that he said this past week. The only thing leaving Iowa faster than Generation Z has been nitrate nitrogen, and over the past 2 months, the exodus of the latter into Iowa streams, while predictable in this post-drought condition, has been nothing short of momentous. Using the nitrate stream sensor data from U.S. Geological Survey and the University of Iowa, they took samples from the Iowa DNR, and the stream discharge data from USGS, I calculate statewide loss during May was 221.4 million pounds as nitrate, and in June, 91.4 million pounds. So in only 2 months, loss from the state totaled 343.8 million pounds. This is more than the annual loss in 8 years since 1999.
Oh, wow. That puts perspective.
The drought sort of slowed things down here, but the stuff that we put on our fields, that's fine and dandy. We put it on our fields, and then it rains. And it goes into...
like it's supposed to. Finally, the drought is over. Hooray, hooray.
Hooray. And so we have... a problem here, and we're not just a problem that we're losing our topsoil and losing the chance to feed ourselves in the future, but all of these inputs that we're putting on the land are evidently not staying where they're supposed to, and so we have something that we talk about as the dead zone, but that's way far away from here, Donna, so I don't think we have to worry about that much. Okay.
Yeah, how unkind of us to send it somewhere else. So we've talked a lot about water quality, but we think we have plenty of water here in Iowa, which I think is attractive to a lot of industries that maybe are not... going to benefit us in the way that we think they are. Anyway, so this is what we wanted to talk to Carolyn Raffensperger about, the quantities of water and some of these things. So do tell, Carolyn.
So I want to start out by saying we have three water issues in Iowa, not just water quantity and water quality, but the speed at which water moves through our landscape. And so we have, as Lana and Donna have described very well, we have contaminated our water with nitrates, with pesticides and the whole suite of pesticides. So we've got water that is not worth drinking. It is not worth, you can't go swimming in it. Fish don't live very well in it. So we've got a water quality problem. And that is, really makes a whole lot of industries and our health, troubled. But we've also got the water quantity issue, and I'm going to focus on that in a minute. But one of the things that has happened with all of our agricultural modifications of the landscape, putting in tiling and so forth, means that we've accelerated the speed of water moving through the landscape. So all of those pesticides, all of that fertilizer, now instead of percolating down and going deeper into the earth and being available for the deeper root zones and being stored in aquifers, it is just rushing through. It's just being, at the rate of which the water flows across the landscape has been greatly accelerated by all those modifications we've made to the landscape. So we are sending those nitrates down even faster down the Mississippi River to New Orleans, where our pesticides are killing off the fish in the dead zone. And so if you like fish, along with your pork or your sweet corn, you're going to have a much harder time getting it because we're poisoning the fish with this accelerated flow of our water and all the things that it carries with it across the landscape. So we've speeded it up. And I just want to give you a hint that one of the things that ice does is slow water down. It freezes water. Water doesn't go very far in our streams. In Ames, we've got a number of really wonderful river waterways. Right behind my house is Clear Creek. We've got the Iowa River. We've got these beautiful, wonderful streams. And ice slows that water down. But with the burning of fossil fuels, we have warmed up our winters. We have fewer days that are below freezing. And so even winter, which slows water down, we are shooting that the water down through those riverways. And, it's able to percolate through and into the tiling systems and then again down to the New Orleans through the Mississippi River and our other waterways. So we've speeded water up, which has magnified the kind of problems that we have with water quality, but it also affects water quantity. So the entire hydrologic system has been altered with climate change. The evapotranspiration, the way that water becomes water vapor and then comes back as rain, water percolating down into our aquifers and recharging the aquifers through all the mechanisms that it does to feed those deep bodies of water. And so with water quantity, we are, as you have probably observed, we've had these cycles of drought and then flooding. We had 4 years of drought in Iowa that was just ended. I don't want to say broken, but ended with the water that we've had this spring. And the mosquitoes are happy, I can tell you that. But what has happened is we have increased the pressure on water quantity with major industries. So the amount of water that a confined animal feeding operation takes or an ethanol plant is quite substantial. Many of our industrial processes, these big facilities that are brought in, namely the changes in the data centers, the need for data centers to drive cryptocurrencies or artificial intelligence, the new chat GPTs and all of those things require huge data centers and cooling for those energy that that they require.
So we're getting some of these companies moving to Iowa?
Oh, yes, we are. We're getting data centers near Des Moines. And as you know, we've covered the landscape with confined animal feeding operations mm-hmm. and with these ethanol plants. So one of the things that many of us have been focused on recently is the new carbon capture and storage pipelines that are slated to go across Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, Minnesota, and perhaps Illinois. And those are going to have huge industrial facilities placed on top of the ethanol plants to capture the carbon dioxide generated by the distilleries of the ethanol plants. And then that CO2 is going to be compressed, and it has to be kept at a certain temperature and then forced through pipelines across multiple states, and then buried below ground, either to keep it underground for indefinitely or used for enhanced oil recovery. Now, the secret there is everybody's calculated how much money we're going to get, how much corn that's going to require, and very few people have looked at the cost in water. And so between the increase in the water needed for the ethanol plant itself, the energy sources that are going to have to be increased, the energy needs for carbon capture and storage, the needs for cooling, the CO2 in the pipelines and compressor stations, et cetera, all are going to increase the water budget of Iowa. And no one has calculated the costs of that.
Well, it kind of begs the The question then, who exactly has the right, or who owns this water anyway? We take for granted that when we turn on the tap, we're going to get water, and we've come to expect that actually the water is not going to be like brown or a funny color. We expect
or
some
water. Or a funny flavor.
Uh-huh. So somebody is these companies come in, use huge quantities, and are they paying for this stuff?
So that's the $3,400 question, or whatever the dollar amount is for that old game show. We don't know.
We don't know.
In the case, we don't know. So there are a couple of questions. Who's paying for it? Are they paying a fair price for it? And where is that money going? Who's regulating the water? And at this point, nobody knows how much water this will require, in part because there are so many variables. So both for the data centers or for these CO2 pipelines and carbon capture and storage, the variables depend on, is it really hot and dry? And will that require more water for cooling? So, you know, with increased climate changes and temperatures like we've had in the last couple of days where it was in the 90s, it will require more water. But we don't have good numbers on that. And then to make things more complicated, the companies have been disguising where the water is going, who's applying for the permits through the Department of Natural Resources. Summit has created these little tiny corporations that are applying for the water permits. And it's very hard to track, except it's the same address for the LLC, the limited, you know, the little partnership is the same address as Summit Pipeline. But we do not know. We have some estimates that it's going to, just for the ethanol plants, require maybe 10% more water. But we don't know how many millions upon millions of gallons of water this will require. And you asked who owned it. It seems to me that water is one of those fundamental requirements for life.
Like air.
And we have a social contract around water, which is that it is in the commons. It belongs to all of us. And if a company like Summit takes more than its share, how do we hold that company accountable? And if you have government that only values the dollars coming into the state coffers and making its rich, benefactors richer and private companies like Summit richer, then we don't have an adequate accounting of this public good. We don't have regulations in place to say, if you contaminate this water, if you discharge it into a stream and kill the fish, if you use more than your share, we will shut you down. We don't have adequate regulations. We don't even really know how much it's going to require for all of these ethanol plants to be hooked up to the carbon capture and storage facility or the data centers' requirements for cooling their enormous power demands. And, you know, a wonderful ecologist named Peter Warshall, who edited the Whole Earth Review, said one time, anytime you have a recipe that calls for energy, you have to add water. And so every one of these new industrial systems that require a lot of energy also require a lot of water. Ah. And we've just been through drought. And the question is, where is that water going to come from with increased demands with climate change and the shortages that we may face? What is going to happen?
Well, are these, especially the high-tech, what are they called? Server farms? What are they called? Anyway, data centers,
data
right?
Center.
Right. Are they coming to Iowa? Because, of course, we have more water than, say, Arizona or Colorado or... Is this like Iowa has a for sale sign on its back? We have less regulation than many states, particularly in terms of CAFOs and stuff like that. So are we being mined? The state of Iowa is being mined for its land and soil resources and its water resources. And is that Is that what's going on?
Yes. And so what you can see is that Iowa has a colonial economy. So the definition of a colonial economy is that you export raw goods.
Mm-hmm.
We're exporting our ethanol to California, which is really our corn and which is our soil and our water.
Mm-hmm.
And then we buy back the finished product. We buy back the gasoline mixed with the ethanol, and we buy back all of these things. And that's the definition of a colonial economy. So Iowa essentially has economy that's similar to, the countries in the South, where we export out the raw materials and import finished products. But yeah, the problem is
mining our resources, basically.
We are mining our soil and our water.
Mm-hmm.
And we are so under-regulated that it's, it's a free-for-all. Now, I do want to note that water law has a dividing line in this country. So west of the 98th meridian, water law is entirely different than east of the 98th uh-huh. meridian, and it's because we have more water. We're not one of the Great Lakes states, but we're pretty close. And Iowa is actually defined by rivers.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at our Constitution starts out by defining our boundaries, which are the Missouri River and the Mississippi River. We are defined by water, and yet we've taken it for granted. We have abused it. We have polluted it. We are using it up, and we've speeded up its exit from the state. And who's in charge? Who is speaking for the public and for the water itself? I would submit to you that the water has its own right to be part of the hydrologic cycle and to be flowing free and clean and clear and support all of the life, including humans. But corporations were deemed to be persons by the U.S. Supreme Court. And what we are doing is giving corporations equal or more than equal shares of our water. I consider that a moral failing on the part of government and on the part of the residents of Iowa to not protect the water for present and for future generations.
I really agree with that. I noticed it. So since my daughter lives in New Zealand, I follow a lot of the environmental things there because they are known on a much smaller scale for a quite pristine environment, and they work a lot to keep their water quality. And one of the things they have done in the last 10 years is given individual rivers and streams their own, their own rights, constitutional rights to be, just like you're saying, run free, be clean. It's a concept that I think has very pragmatic results. I don't know how we would ever get there in our country, but
it depends on how thirsty we get. This idea of lots and lots of water being given maybe to the highest bidder, it makes one think, and you kind of look around and see where it all goes. Yes, we've got green and growing things, but CAFOs and big data centers and the carbon pipeline, it seems like I don't care if they are people. They're pretty big people if there are people, and they seem to have more power over us. We're going to come back and talk more with Carolyn Raffensperger about this. This is important stuff here. This is KHOI. This is Donalana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Thank you. Welcome back. We're talking about water, quantity, quality, and the speed in which it kind of flows out of our state and into the pockets of, it seems, a lot of people. We're talking to Carolyn Rassenberger about the state of our water economy here in Iowa. Carolyn, I have a question. We're finding out more that there's big corporations, big entities using a whole lot of water in our state, or the CAFOs and irrigation. Irrigation uses a lot. Meat packers and data centers and all sorts of stuff. You don't think that they'd use water, but they certainly do. Do you happen to know what happens to the water that goes into these places? Is it just used once and thrown down the drain, or do they recycle some of it? Do you have any information on that?
Or is it contaminated when they're done with it?
You know, it's different for every one of those operations. And I wanted to reframe one of the things you said, Lana. Mm-hmm. This is not going to the highest bidder. This is going to the lowest bidder if it's a big corporation. That's the sorry part about it. So for all of these, the water can end up being discharged into, you know, any number of places. It might go down the sewer. It might be discharged into a river. It might be recycled and reused over and over again, depending on the actual operation. But the question is, who is actually looking at that? Who is monitoring a discharge into a river? Who is monitoring the discharge of potentially contaminated water into a sewer system? What happens, you know, where the water comes from, how it's used, and then where it goes afterwards are often great mysteries. So, you know, we have some information about the Summit water requirements from their testimony before the Iowa Utilities Commission. Used to be called the Iowa Utilities Board. It's changed its name. And we have some information from their permits before the Department of Natural Resources that they will be discharging some of this water into a stream. And, you know, the question is, does that overwhelm a stream? What happens to the wells in the nearby area if you have a private well and one of these big data centers or one of these ethanol plants uses too much of the water in an aquifer and makes these private wells go dry? So, we have a lot of private wells in Iowa that are subject to a lot of pressure, both from contaminants, but also from use. And who then protects that minority, that one person's, you know, family's well, when you're up against a big corporation? You know, the big corporation is going to say, you can't prove it, Sar, that we took too much water. You can't prove it. And so the private person who's, you know, lone well out there goes dry has little to no recourse. Do you think you're going to shut down one of the big ethanol plants or the carbon capture and storage when millions of dollars are at stake and it's just your little well? We're in trouble. I do want to point out that water carries the footprint of its place, the fingerprint of its place. So the water in Ames has a certain suite of minerals, and it has a certain chemical profile that is actually picked up and carried in our hair. So you can tell if I drink a lot of bottled water or if I'm drinking Ames water by measuring the various minerals in hair. And I want to bear the fingerprint of my place. I want to be a reflection of this place. You know, Donna, you mentioned the personhood of rivers in New Zealand. And I started this conversation by talking about community sufficiency. And what we lose in the discussion of the rights of nature, where that river has a right to flow free, is that it's actually a right of community, because it's the indigenous community, the Maori, with the river. And what we don't think about is that it's not just a property right. It's not just an individual right, but these are rights that we hold with each other to clean and healthy water, to an ecological wholeness
of
our
place. Would you call that the commons then? Is that the right use of that?
Call it the commons, yeah. But it's a different set of rights. Mm-hmm. And it's the commons is the closest that we have, I think, in Western law mm-hmm. to the idea of the rights of nature, which is these rights that communities hold with each other. And one of the basis of the rights of nature, coming out of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, is that Indigenous people have a unique right under that declaration to give or withhold their consent to anything that might alter the future of their place, of that river. And so under the rights of the river, with the rights of nature with the river, the guardian of that river has to give or withhold its consent to something that might affect its future. But consent is not just something that inheres in an individual, the indigenous communities, but also in our rights for governance. So it is the basis of good governance to give or withhold our consent. The consent of the governed is what makes mm-hmm, government mm-hmm. possible. And we need to think about whether we give or whether we withhold our consent to having our water polluted, to having our water accelerated at breakneck speeds across the landscape, and to be used up by private corporations for its own private gain.
You know, in thinking about this subject, I sort of dug around and tried to familiarize myself about the source of Iowa water, and I found out that the Jordan Aquifer is kind of the big aquifer that is mainly under Iowa, runs from the northeast to southwest Iowa, and it's the source of drinking water for 500,000 people. And so that's some of us. And we hear of the Ogallala Aquifer, but that's farther west. And what I've been hearing about that aquifer, that's they're having problems out there. Wells are drying up. People aren't being able to irrigate as heavily as they used to. Things are kind of sketchy out there. We have to remember that aquifers aren't just a bottomless pit. They fill up over time, and we use them over time, but balances can be broken quite interesting, quite quickly. Not every water request in the state of Iowa has been granted. I ran across something in May 2020, the Pattison Sand Company, which fracks silica sand for oil and gas, or which mines silica sand for gas fracking near Clayton, Iowa, it tried to get a permit to draw millions of gallons of water from wells on its property from the Jordan Aquifer. And they plan to pump 34 million gallons of water annually to ship by rail to the West Coast to sell as drinking water. So there you go. People need water out there, that's fine. But again, the permit was denied, supposedly. That's pretty amazing. But it was because the common good, because people got thinking, I think, well, maybe we need a little drinking water here. So that was one water permit that was denied, at least so far. Maybe they'll try again. Who knows? But that's another thing. Not just using water for processing and for industry and agriculture here, but the concept of bottling it and selling it to someplace else. It gets back to what you're saying, Carolyn, about being able to find the community of water in your very own cells. Can we drink the water that is beneath our feet?
Oh, yes. And, you know, one of the things, secrets I know about Donna is that she can actually taste the difference between filtered water and unfiltered water. I don't have that kind of taste acuity. But the quality of our water affects the taste and quality of our food. And someone like Donna with that finely honed sense of what's in our water, who can taste the fine distinctions in it. We need to be more tuned into our place. We need to treasure and savor the water that is beneath our feet, or in the streams next to us, or in the reservoir nearby. Ames has done a remarkable job in protecting some of its water at Ada Hayden.
Yes.
As a water resource. We need more of those kinds of far-sighted and applying that kind of foresight to protecting water for both present and future generations.
Well, I think we, as a community in Ames, we've tried very hard not to follow the problems in Des Moines, so...
Oh, that's an amazing thing. Right. Following the nitrate problems in the Raccoon River and lawsuits. It's funny how all these lawsuits can go into the courts, and somehow the environment is never the winner in these lawsuits. The Des Moines Water Works is still having problems with making their water usable to drink because of all of the things that happen upstream.
Well, speaking of laws, Carolyn, give us an update on the carbon pipeline and where are we with that? And in a legal sense, in a political sense.
So the Summit pipeline situation is in flux. The Iowa Utilities Commission gave Summit a permit, but it's conditional on Summit getting permits in South Dakota and North Dakota. And it has to get two permits in North Dakota, one for the pipeline and one for where it's going to sequester it underground. And at present, it has neither permit in North Dakota, nor does it have a permit in South Dakota. So this is going to be delayed for a while. Hmm. In addition, several counties and individuals and the Sierra Club have requested that the Iowa Utilities Commission reconsider its decision to give that permit. Now, it's not likely that the commission will retract or take away the Summit pipeline permit. And so then it will go to court in Iowa. And they will challenge it on a number of grounds, mostly the underpinnings and the rationale for giving eminent domain to over over 800 farmers in Iowa.
You want to explain that bit? I think that's a really cogent piece of law, long-standing law, that is troublesome in this issue.
Yeah, so, one of the really formidable powers of government is to take private property and put it into the commons, put it into use for the public.
Public good, supposedly.
Yeah, is it in the public interest? And what happened is they said that giving all of these farmers' land to Summit for Summit's private gain, most of that gain going to come from tax credits from something called the federal law called the Inflation Reduction Act. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to make a private company richer using private land. And so they gave this power to a private company for something that appears to be for private gain. Now,
so forcing farmers eventually, if it goes through, to sell their land that they don't want to sell necessarily.
Well, sell an easement for their land.
Right.
So they still have access to it, although some of that access is limited. They can't build on top of it. They can't plant trees on top of it, and so forth. But so they lose certain rights over that land. Mm-hmm. And they are now at risk from a possible CO2 pipeline rupture or leak, which can cause carbonic acid in their soils or their waterways where it crosses a stream or a wetland on their land.
And it's lethal. Hello.
And it's an asphyxiant. So it could kill cattle, or, you know, it could kill your livestock, or it can kill people. So this is an unusually dangerous kind of pipeline. It is not, you know, your natural gas or your crude oil pipeline. We actually talk about a kill zone, a fatality zone with these CO2 pipelines. And so these farmers are being forced to take on this additional risk that they did not ask for, that they refused to sell their easement, and it's being taken from them and given to this private company against their desires. Now, you know, lots of us have different feelings about private property, but what I think we do affirm is that people should be secure in their homes. They should be safe from unwarranted harm, a preventable harm. And in the case of a CO2 pipeline, which is inherently dangerous, it seems to me that people, whether you're living in Peoria and in a basement apartment and it goes through, you know, a CO2 pipeline, you are more at risk, whether you didn't have anything to do with eminent domain or eminent domain. But we should have a right to be secure in our own homes. And this government decision threatens that fundamental right using the power of eminent domain.
You're listening to KHOY, and this is the Donna Lena Kitchen. Find out more about this fine radio station at www.khoyfm.org. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lena Kitchen. We're talking about water today and the rights to our natural resources. I was put in mind of a song that was written quite a few decades ago by a songwriter named Jean Ritchie, Kentucky. She's from Kentucky, and she wrote about coal mining in Kentucky, and it seems that they were things do not change. Big money comes in, big money takes your land, big money causes problems on your land. And some of the lyrics from her song called Black Waters kind of kept going through my head as I was thinking about this show. She talks about living in Kentucky and on her beautiful mountainside, but the lines say, now there's scenes of destruction on every land, and only black waters run over my land. They tore down the mountains and covered my corn, and the graves on the hillside are a mile deep down, and the company man stands talking with his hat in his hand while poison black water rises over my land. So some words from Jean Ritchie about water and how things change in Kentucky.
And what happens when your local resources are...
There it goes. There
blind.
It goes.
Yeah. So, Carolyn...
Well, you know,
go ahead.
I'm sitting in the county with Dakota Access crude oil pipeline running through our county.
Yep.
And it crosses Des Moines River, which is the drinking water of Des Moines. And so that Blackwater song by wonderful Jean Ritchie is apt even for our town and our home in this state. Why would we allow a crude oil pipeline to go across the Mississippi River, the Missouri River, the Des Moines River? Why would we allow that? Why?
Well, but we have, and I know you were part of the legal strategy to try to prevent this from happening, and the powers that be went ahead and did it anyway. So how is the carbon pipeline going to be any different? Is it too late? What do you think is going to happen?
Never too late.
Good.
You know, one of the interesting things about the CO2 pipelines is that both Republicans and Democrats don't like it. So we've had almost an equal number of state legislators in Iowa oppose the pipelines in eminent domain. That's remarkable. I've never seen that kind of agreement.
Bipartisan. There you go.
Yep. And, you know, we've never, we haven't lost yet. We don't have that pipeline going across our land. And so I think that the stronger we stand together and the more that we change how we account for the public good. So most of our measurements of what is good is we measure in dollars. But what if we started measuring things, in terms of water, if we actually had a water budget, what would change in our decision making? You know, a good friend of mine, Mark Edwards, who's worked on these pipelines, specifically Dakota Access with me, said we needed to measure it in terms of frogs' lives. And, you know, I think of all of the aquatic beings, you know, if it's good for a frog, it's good for me. And, you know, we need a water budget. We need a water accounting so that we can pass on water in good shape to those to come. You know, when we have the national parks and when the national parks were created, the law that created them set in place a standard for how we treated the national parks. It said, national parks are for us to enjoy, this present generation to enjoy, and we are to pass them on unimpaired to future generations. Imagine if that was the standard for water in Iowa, that we pass on our water unimpaired to future generations. We would slow it down. We would ask projects to measure their impact in terms of water more than dollars. We would honor the water quality and the water quantity that the rivers themselves, the wetlands themselves, need to sustain themselves. You know, the part of the North Dakota that I come from was part of the Prairie Pothole region. And what I didn't know is that the part of Iowa that we're sitting in is also was Prairie Potholes. Almost all of those have been destroyed. Those potholes slowed water down. You know, one of the things we need to do is restore the water landscape, the natural water landscape that was here before. We did so much change through our agricultural practices. There's a lot we can do. Will we do it in my lifetime? I am going to stand with all who do fight for a sane, reverent approach to our water.
Well, it's a big battle, and we didn't get here overnight. So thank you always for the work that you do on the behalf of all of us who are sort of still taking water for granted, you know? I mean, it's almost like air. It's so natural to us. We forget that it's value. I mean, there's a movie, a new called The Grab, but it's all about the international water and land grab because, you know, with climate change, there will be less arable land. There will be changing water patterns, you know, and privatization of water is a big thing. This has been going on for 20 years slowly and slowly, you know, because different parts of the world are having, like Mexico City, one of the biggest cities in the world. And there were these problems in Brazil for the last 10 or 15 years, like where major cities are not having enough water.
South Africa. When you have just regular folks, so you're just your moms and dads.
Millions of people living.
Lining up with plastic
with
pails.
Jerry cans, right.
Yeah, jerry cans to get their water. Just because we live in Iowa, we can't be we can't be ignorant of what's going on in the rest of the world, nor can we
water
ignore what is going on here.
Extremely valuable and likely to become more so. So,
and the influx of all of this, the big industries and all the economic growth that sounds so good on the surface, but let's ask where the water goes for all of these big inputs or big things that
so,
are being
so
born.
So, Carolyn, in the process of, say, for example, the carbon sequestration stuff, the water that's used, and then is it contaminated when it exits the factory or the facility?
Hard to tell. It depends on which process we're talking about.
Oh.
So there are, a number of processes. There are some that may result in contaminated water. There's some that may not. A lot of these things require very clean water, and some don't. So it's a mixed bag, and parsing all of the information about mm-hmm. how much water, what happens, how will it be used, where does it go afterwards, are not the questions. The Iowa Utilities Board asked almost none of that. And so we don't have any of that information in the permit that was given to Summit. And, the assumption is always that the data center or the confined animal feeding operation or whatever it is great for Iowa because of the money it's going to bring. And we do not account for water. We've got to change that practice alone to ask about the accounting for water.
Well, if both the Democrats and the Republicans are against this, who is for it, and why did the Iowa Utilities Commission kind of make this fence-sitting rule?
Because major power brokers do care about this because they can get rich off of it. So we have Republicans and Democrats mm-hmm. that are very high in influential, from former Republican governor of Iowa to the current USDA secretary. His son, Vilsack's son, is the lawyer for Summit. So you've got Branstad, the former governor, Republican governor, and you've got Jesse Vilsack. Both, I could keep on going. You've got very high-powered people who put this plan together because they can get an enormous tax credit from the government. Which will make a lot of people rich, but it's going to make the farmer rich.
In the billions, right? We're not just, it's big.
And the thing about the IRA tax credit is there's no cap on it. Oh. So they vastly underestimated the cost of that tax credit when they put it into the federal law. And now they're being blindsided by just how much money could evaporate from the federal budget.
Thank you for being with us today, Carolyn. And if there's, where can people find out more information? Is there a website that is helpful for this sort of information?
You can go to carboncapturefacts.org and look at the water that we know could be used for carbon capture and storage. Anything that Chris Jones has done mm-hmm. is incredibly valuable. The Sierra Club has done a report on water and carbon capture and storage that's very good.
You can
also look at the Global Alliance for the Rights of Nature for the rights of water and the rights of rivers. I happen to be a judge for the International Tribunal for the Rights of Nature, adjudicating cases that are brought on behalf of nature for violations of those community rights.
Good. Thank you for being with us today. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you on this fine community radio station. We had music by the Barn Owl Band today. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Great engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.